missing on these dreary moments is that for even the happiest couples you see, everything before they met each other was obviously a failure. All relationships must fail until one doesn't, and that's just the natural course of life and the way that things must be. So you shouldn't let the failed relationships of your past muddy your thinking on the future ones. I should look at the bright side when thinking back to Jillian's heartbreaking cafeteria confrontation. It's good that it failed in a plume of smoke and fire the way that it did. Say if she'd felt sorry for me, accepted my letter, and we'd made a real go of it, holding hands in the playground, scribbling love notes, the works. Then, months down the line, the true feelings came to the surface and we had a nasty split. Would she have gotten shared custody of Freckles the giraffe? Or worse, would Freckles go to live with her outright? After all, I was only a third grader. I couldn't support Freckles on a measly chores allowance. No judge in their right mind would have given me custody. Would I have ever made it to that final level of Super Mario 3 where those wooden ship cannons made me want to smash my goddamn Nintendo controller against my television screen? It's good that life works out the way it does, for better or worse, because that's the way it must happen in order for us to be where we are and who we are in the present. That's the way I see it, anyway. So when I saw Aaron and his situation, I couldn't help but feel both sorrow and jealousy towards him. Jealousy that he was enjoying the feeling of love, of which there is no similar feeling in the world, and sorrow that, in my opinion, this girl would end up taking that love he was feeling and crushing it like a beer can under your redneck uncle's truck tire. If it was me, I'd rather live in ignorance. So that's what I let him do. Not like he would have listened to my opinion anyway. I wouldn't, and haven't, listened to anyone else's opinions on such matters over the years either. I just hoped Aaron wouldn't end up like I had, with his favorite Beanie Baby in his lap, attempting to hold back tears in the cafeteria. I also hoped Aaron didn't play with Beanie Babies at 26 years old, or the relationship really was going to end terribly. A couple days later, we said our goodbyes to Ryan and boarded a train towards Perth. The train ride was smooth and easy, and we arrived at our destination sometime in the evening. I went to a payphone and called the number Bella had given me via Facebook message. No answer. She was supposed to pick us up from the train station upon our arrival, but she was nowhere in sight. We waited and waited. I called again in an hour or so. No answer. By the time darkness was starting to fall, the train station was closing. We walked outside and set our bags near the entranceway, unsure of what to do next. We started looking for potential sleeping places, but there didn't seem to be any winners. We were in quite a populated area. A couple of cigarettes later, a security guard came outside and asked if we were Aaron and Tom. "Yeah," Aaron answered. "Well, there's someone on the phone for you in here," he told us. We both breathed a heavy sigh of relief. Aaron went inside to talk to Bella while I waited with the gear. He returned outside a few moments later. "I guess she's not coming." "Huh?" "She said she went to the wrong train station earlier and ended up driving around for a half hour, so she just went home instead of coming here. She said she's already in her PJs now, so she doesn't want to leave again. Said we could take a taxi to her house, but I told her we didn't have any money."
"Are you serious? Did you tell her we'd have to sleep on the streets?"
"Yeah, she said she was sorry."
"Sorry? You've got to be fucking kidding me."
She lived less than 3 miles away. We had a great time with her and Naomi in Rome and had kept in touch on Facebook frequently since then. We were no strangers to her. Why, then, would she allow us to have to sleep on the street while she lounged about in her pajamas a mere 5-minute drive away? We couldn't walk to her house because we had no internet to look up directions and no way to call her back to ask. I was aghast. Of all the things people had done to help us during our travels, complete strangers had given us meals, showers, a place to stay, rides for hours beyond their original destinations, and this person whom I thought was a friend had left us in such a predicament. I was angry and disappointed. There was no time for sitting and stewing over it, though. I assumed she had her reasons and tried to think nothing more of it.
We now had to find a place to sleep for the night. The train to the airport wouldn't be leaving until late afternoon, but we couldn't wander too far from the train station just in case. We walked around the general area, finding a children's park and quickly abandoning that idea, a group of trees that we eventually decided was too close to the roadway, and finally a little opening between three brick walls about 100 yards from the train station. The opening to the little cove was facing the train station. Since it was abandoned at nighttime, this would give us visual cover from the road, as well as houses in the area. We wouldn't have to worry about people spotting us until the next morning when cars would start pulling into the train station. As we cooked a meal of rice and tuna over our little backpacking stove, I laid my sleeping bag out over the sand and bunched up my clothes as a pillow. My inflatable backpacking pillow had been punctured and abandoned long ago under a bridge somewhere in Europe. I quickly wolfed down the meal, smoked a cigarette, and pulled the bag up over my head to avoid the cold night air. Sleep eluded me. I rolled around and around. It felt as if no sooner than I'd finally closed my eyes, they were open again as light and heat filled the air around my head. I groggily threw my sleeping bag open to escape the heat of the sun and pulled my bandana over my eyes to try to fall back asleep. It was to no avail, and I pulled it back upwards only a short while later. I sat up to see the train station parking lot filled with cars. I made some coffee over our little stove as Aaron stirred to consciousness, and then I packed up my gear. "You want to get packed up so we can head into the train station and get some Wi-Fi or something?" I asked. "I'd kind of like to stay out here a little while longer." "Why? I mean, what is there to do out here?" "I don't know. I just don't want to head in there just yet." "Okay then. Well, I will see you later."
"You're going to head in now?"
"Yeah, I'm not sitting out here in the sun and staring at the ground."
"Oh. Well, I'll be in a while."
"All right then." I was confused, but had long ago stopped trying to make sense of the things he said or did. So I went inside and watched movies on my laptop while I counted the hours until our bus came to take us to the airport. They dragged on and on. I estimated I had slept only about 2 hours total. Now I was about to board a flight to New Zealand, which would take about 6.5 hours, landing us in Auckland at around 6 a.m. The next day, we would take a flight south to Christchurch, and from there make our way to Lake Tekapo, where we would camp for a week or more before returning to the city. I opened up my journal to a page where I had tallied up our financial situation before leaving Kalgoorlie, titled as, "Just How Fucked Are We?" There was $240 in the bank account, $137 cash on Aaron, $110 cash in Australian dollars, $65 in PayPal, $25 on Odesk, $125 in unpaid invoices, left us with $702 total, minus $266 for plane tickets in New Zealand, minus $167 from the train ride from Kalgoorlie to Perth, leaves us a total of $269 to make it through New Zealand. And if the listener will remember, I had calculated around $650 to be the minimum cost to survive 2 weeks in New Zealand. Things did not look promising. I wondered what would happen if we ran out of money there. Would we starve to death in the mountains? Would something bad happen as we were forced to live out in the wilderness? Or would things turn around as they almost always had, and goodwill of kind people save us from misfortune? There was nothing left to do on our part but hope for the best and dive in head first as we always did. I wrote a note in my journal shortly before running to catch the bus that would take us to the airport. "I'm not sure how we'll pull this one off. I just hope I live to laugh about it later." End of chapter 29. Chapter 30. No Sleep Till Auckland. Auckland, New Zealand. It can hardly be a coincidence that no language on earth has ever produced the expression, "as pretty as an airport." Douglas Adams. November 6th. We arrived in Auckland feeling like a pair of zombies. Even after getting very little sleep outside the train station in Perth, I hadn't slept at all on the flight. The all-too-familiar feeling of uncertainty made sure of that. I was still clueless how we were going to make it through New Zealand with the small amount of money we had remaining. All I knew was this. I was tired as fuck, and I would figure it out later, as usual. Customs was quite an interesting adventure in and of itself. First, we were approached by a drug-sniffing dog, a drug-sniffing beagle, to be accurate. It wagged its tail and lightly sniffed the air next to us as we passed. The next thing we knew, we were being stopped by security. "Do you have any drugs?" "Here we go again." "No, no drugs." "Have you done drugs recently?" "I smoked marijuana a few days ago," Aaron offered honestly, referring to one of the Australians we'd met at Kalgoorlie who had shared some with him. I looked at Aaron incredulously. Why in the fuck would you tell him that, I was thinking. "Well, the dog doesn't care about that. He's trained to find white stuff." I breathed a sigh of relief. "Oh, well, I haven't done any of that," Aaron replied. I looked down at the dog. He was just staring at me with his tongue out, wagging his tail profusely. "I think he just wants to be petted," I offered. "No, he doesn't want to be petted. He's a highly trained canine officer. He only shows interest in someone if he smells drugs." "Yeah, seriously though, dogs love me. I think he just wants to be petted. I promise you we don't have any drugs." "Sir, the dog is highly..." "Hey there, little fella. Aw, yeah, you're just a friendly little puppy, aren't you?" I petted the beagle as it licked my hand and continued its happy wagging. I looked at the guard. He lowered his eyes embarrassingly before telling us he was sorry for bothering us and continuing on his way. I left the fierce, drug-annihilating Snoopy crew and approached the next counter. A young man in black-rimmed glasses greeted me as Aaron went to another row. "Do you have any camping equipment?" he asked. "Yes, sir, a sleeping bag and a hammock." "Were they used outside?" I stared at him blankly. Yeah, it's camping equipment, so... "Do you have any shoes?" I glanced at my feet. Clearly I was wearing shoes, as were exactly 100% of the other passengers on the plane. "Yeah." "Were they worn outside?" This guy can't be serious. I looked him right in the eyes and said, "No, sir, actually I, levitated the entire time that I was in Australia." He made a short, stifled chuckle. "Is there any dirt on them?" "No." "Go ahead, then." Finally, we approached one last line where our picture was being taken by a little machine. There were large signs which read, "No hats or sunglasses," placed along both sides of the line. It's important that I stop here and paint this picture for the listener. I haven't mentioned so far, for lack of necessity, that Aaron wore an army green special forces style boonie hat everywhere we went. New York, Spain, Germany, Italy, Thailand, everywhere. The thing looked absolutely ridiculous. In Bangkok, he wore it along with an army green rain poncho, which made him look exactly like a soldier in the Korean War. Luckily, we hadn't been in North Korea or old people would have been scattering in fear-stricken flashbacks. Before we'd even entered the airport, I'd said something to him about the hat. "Dude, take that thing off. You look like you're about to bomb the fucking place or something." "Huh? What's wrong with my hat?" Here we were in line with the no hats signs all around. I didn't even think of it until it was too late, though. "Take off your hat, Aaron." "Huh?" he asked innocently as he approached the front of the line. "Sir," a voice called from behind us. I looked around to see a security guard coming for Aaron. "Come with me, please."
"Me?"
Aaron asked. "Yes, you. Now." Aaron looked back at me inquisitively as they grabbed him and led him away from the line and onto God knows where. I quickly diverted my stare forward and acted like I didn't even know him. I turned to the person behind me. Well, that guy was creepy. Wonder if he was a terrorist or something. Then I shrugged and walked through the line and out of the airport. Aaron caught up to me as I was smoking a cigarette by the entrance.
"Dude, that was crazy. They were asking me all kinds of questions and shit."
"Yeah, that's because you're dressed like fucking Rambo with that hat, man." We found a place called Kiwi Backers Hostel very close to the airport, which offered a free shuttle. We had one night to kill before taking our plane to the South Island, so we opted to spend the cash for a real bed. It was $30 apiece each night for a room. Compare that to the $1 to $3 we had been paying in Southeast Asia for a room all to ourselves. It was cringeworthy. This was why we were only allowing ourselves one night in a hostel during our entire stay in New Zealand. And really, we shouldn't have even allowed ourselves the one. After a quick phone call, we got picked up by the shuttle and made it to the hostel. I had a moment of brilliance while we were sitting at the airport and came up with the idea to try to get the hostel to lock up the majority of my possessions during our foray onto the South Island. I knew we were going to spend our time hitchhiking around down there and camping in random areas, so I saw no point in dragging around all of my electronic equipment. We had to come back to the same place to catch a ride to the airport anyway, so it would all be waiting here when we returned north. My pack weighed close to 70 pounds now after taking on some of Corey's gear when he left. That didn't include my guitar, which I still carried slung over my shoulder alongside my pack. After we booked a room and were ready to settle in, I asked the receptionist whether or not this was possible. "Yeah, sure, no problem," she said with a genuine smile. So far, I was loving the locals in New Zealand. Everyone whom we'd encountered so far was very friendly. I left just about everything. My laptop, the Pro Tools interface and microphone, tripods, anything that wasn't directly related to camping. My pack dropped from 70 pounds all the way down to about 35. It felt like a feather. Aaron, on the other hand, oddly wanted to hang on to just about everything he had. He handed me a small plastic bag with some rocks and a few odds and ends. Is this really all you want to drop? You're not going to need your computer or any of that stuff, you know. Yeah, I think everything else in here is stuff I need. I'd like to keep the computer just in case. I was astonished. I'd gotten a peek into the contents of Aaron's backpack back in Rome. He and Corey had gone off in search of groceries early on in our stay in the nature preserve. I had been looking for Aaron's camera to take a picture of some of the furniture I'd made, and my phone had died. When I opened up his pack, I discovered a world of absurdity. Dozens of rocks and shells he had gathered, sticks he'd whittled, tourist pamphlets of just about anything, maps of places we'd long since left, and the most outrageous of all wouldn't even be discovered until he made it back to camp. "Hey, Aaron, you got this big bag full of batteries here, but I can't seem to get any to work in your camera." "Oh, yeah, they're all dead." "What? You're carrying around a bag full of dead batteries? Do you realize how much this shit weighs?" "Yeah, well, I figured sometimes there's a couple minutes left on each of them, you know, just in case." Fast forward to New Zealand. I don't know whether or not the useless bag of dead batteries remained in there, but I know his pack weight had slowly made it up to an easy 50 or 60 pounds after taking on a lot of Corey's gear, and he hadn't given me much weight at all to put in the pack we were leaving here in the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel. "Aaron, I'm telling you something right now," I warned. "You're still carrying the grocery bags. You have the option right now to dump as much weight as you want, and I know for a fact there are tons of things in that pack you can get rid of. So if this is some kind of deliberate attempt to pawn off the grocery bags onto me, it's not happening. Now's your chance to get rid of the weight." "No, no, it's not anything like that. I understand." He had carried the bags of groceries all throughout Europe since his pack had been the lightest, and he'd complained about it every step of the way. He was constantly forcing Corey and me to take on extra weight as he insisted we carry certain items. Corey offered to trade him with the cajon bag on endless occasions, but he never took him up on it. It was as if he just wanted to bitch and moan about it. It was fair, we thought. I had the heaviest pack, plus my guitar. Corey had the middleweight pack, plus his cajon. Aaron had the lightest pack with nothing extra to carry. The grocery bag barely weighed 5 pounds. It was an argument that had come up almost as much as money. I wasn't having it again. After sorting the bags out, we started chatting with a young Alaskan guy who was our dorm mate. We decided to jump a bus into downtown Auckland with him and check everything out. The extreme lack of sleep was catching up with me, so I figured this would be a way to wake myself back up. I had adopted a system for fighting jet lag, which basically consisted of forcing myself to stay awake until a reasonable hour in the new time zone. Whenever I arrived there, I planned to stay awake until at least 9 p.m. the same night, so I could fall asleep and wake up at a normal time. If I'd gotten there and gone to sleep at noon, I'd wake up at night and destroy my whole sleep schedule entirely. So far I was doing good, but I could feel 24 hours of no sleep starting to catch up with me, especially after having to sleep outside of the train station for my last rest, really making it feel closer to 36 hours. We followed our new friend, Brian, to the bus stop and headed towards the city. He actually had a priority there that was familiar to us, find fuel for his backpacking stove. We couldn't buy any yet because of our impending flight to the South Island the following day. Brian was planning to bike around New Zealand during his stay. He'd worked for the National Park System in Alaska at Denali National Park. If you're unfamiliar, this is the park in which Christopher McCandless, whose life was chronicled in the book and movie Into the Wild, met his untimely end in an abandoned school bus. Brian had hiked to the bus some 20 miles into the wilderness on a few occasions. Auckland was a fairly large city, and I saw huge busking potential if we had been planning to stay there. We strolled around for an hour or so before finding an outdoor store so Brian could find his fuel. By then, my lack of sleep was really starting to catch up with me. We casually made our way to a bus station when I decided to check the time on my phone. What I saw when the time and date appeared on my little screen made my heart drop. Oh my God. What? They both spun around as if I'd been shot or something. The time change. I guess I'd figured it out wrong. I thought we'd land on the same day, but it looks like it skipped ahead one. Our flight to Christchurch was today, almost 4 hours ago. No way, that can't be right, Aaron replied. Look at my phone, it's the 6th. Motherfucker. Well, what the hell are we going to do then? Brian offered a possible solution. He told us that sometimes when that happens, the airline will let you catch a ride on an open seat of a later flight. It's worth a try, we figured. So we had to make it back to the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel to use their phone and hopefully catch the shuttle to the airport. Unfortunately for us, it didn't turn out to be so simple. The bus system in Auckland was confusing, and we ended up hopping on the wrong bus, a couple of the wrong buses actually, before finally making it back to the Backpackers Hostel 2 hours later. My sleep deprivation was starting to destroy me both physically and emotionally. I was nearing 30 hours without rest by this point. I ran up to the counter at our hostel. Can I please use your phone? We missed our plane flight. I thought you were staying here tonight, she inquired. It's a long story. We might be. I don't know. She handed me the phone and I called Jetstar, the airline we were booked with. After navigating a web of phone prompts and hold music, I was finally connected with a cheerful male voice on the other side and met with the usual customer service routine. I'm so sorry that happened, sir. I'll do my best to resolve this issue. I explained what had happened, and he seemed like he was going to be very helpful. Yeah, this shouldn't be too much of a problem, mate. Have you heard of standby? I think that's what our friend here told us about, but we're not sure how it works exactly. Well, it's basically where we just have you kind of wait at the airport, and then when a seat opens up, you can take it. Now, they should be able to do that, but you'll have to go down there and talk to them. That would be incredible, man. So you're saying we can do that today? Yeah, just head to the airport and go to the Jetstar counter. They'll be able to put you on a standby list. As long as you're okay with waiting for an available flight, I mean, it could be minutes or hours. We really don't know when it comes to this type of thing. You should be all right. No, we don't care about waiting. That's perfect. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, man. I was incredibly relieved. I told the girl at reception that we'd have to cancel our stay for the night since we needed to head back to the airport right away. She was very friendly still and quickly took care of everything. I handed her the pack which was to be stored there during our 2 weeks on the South Island, and we hopped on the bus after saying a quick goodbye to Brian. I was in a trance by the time I arrived back at the airport. You reach a point after not sleeping for a long period of time where things start to seem unreal, almost like you're tripping on acid or something. We made our way through the crowds of people in the airport and found the Jetstar counter. I approached the woman behind the desk. Hi, I just spoke to one of your phone representatives. We missed our flight earlier due to a misunderstanding on the time change from an earlier flight. Anyway, he told us you could put us on standby so we could catch a ride to Christchurch.
We don't do standby.
What do you mean? I just got off the phone with one of your reps less than an hour ago. He told me to come in here.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't know why he told you that. We've never done standby seating before.
So what are you saying, that we've just lost all the money we paid for our flights?
Unfortunately, yes. Tickets are non-refundable.
Are you kidding me? We just lost $300 and you're not going to do anything to try and fix this? I mean, I get that it's our fault, but come on, you can't try to help?
So I'm going to have to ask you to calm down. Unfortunately,
fuck it! Jesus fucking tap dancing Christ. I wheeled around and marched the other way, Aaron quickly sprinting behind to catch up.
What are we going to do now?
I guess just take the shuttle back to the hostel. I mean, we obviously can't afford another ticket. We're going to have to hitchhike south or something. We made it outside and each smoked a cigarette to calm down. I was so tired that I couldn't even comprehend most of what was happening. I was taking everything exactly as it happened and dealing with it retroactively. After the cigarette, I walked back to the airport to use the payphone while Aaron waited outside with the bags. I called the number for the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel and promptly heard a couple of clicks as the digital payphone reset and ate my dollar. Yes, a whole dollar to make a goddamn phone call to begin with was frustrating. But this was it. That was the final straw. I came unhinged. I walked briskly through the airport towards the customer service desk far on the other side. I cursed loudly to myself the entire way. Fucking piece of shit! Of course that goddamn phone would eat my money. Stupid fucking cocksucking airport. This is the dumbest country in existence. Sorry, sir, we can't refund your ticket. Yeah, fuck you, bitch. Fucking bullshit, stupid goddamn place. People stared. Everyone did, actually. There were looks of genuine concern as well as looks of fear, looks of confusion and looks of anger. I approached the customer service desk, still raving. I need to use a phone.
Well, hey there, sir.
The cheerful little fellow behind the desk had a cheeky smile. You can use the phones over there along that wall by the accommodations listings if you'd like. The payphone ate my dollar.
Well, sir, I'm sorry to hear that. Those phones over there by the accommodation listings are free.
You mean I didn't even have to use the payphone in the first place? I can just use those for free?
That's exactly right. They're here for people to call hotels and taxis and such.
Well, thanks. I called the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel and got the receptionist girl I'd been working with all day. It's me. They screwed us. I need a ride, please.
Oh, you're kidding me, mate. I thought the guy on the phone said you could get a standby ticket.
He lied. All right, then. I'll send the van over. Don't worry about paying. After making it back to the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel, we were pretty much decimated, mentally, physically, and emotionally. We could only afford one night's stay there, so we had to form a game plan for the next day. In the end, there was only one option, to hitchhike to the southern coast and then hop a boat down to the South Island. We had to buy some stove fuel in the city as well as food, and then find a way to the edge of town where we could catch a ride south. Surprisingly, after close to 36 hours since my last dismal rest outside of the train station in Perth, I had a lot of trouble sleeping that night. I tossed and turned while feelings of worry, anger, and sadness filled my head. We had lived the past 2 or 3 months in relative comfort, minus the one night stuck outside the train station in Oz. Now we were about to relive the hardships of Europe all over again. A strict diet of rice and tuna, sleeping in random places, and wondering all the time where our next ride or place to sleep would come from. I cursed our seemingly infinite bad luck and hoped for good fortune over the next couple of weeks. Unfortunately, my wishes would go on unanswered. End of chapter 30. Chapter 31. Kiwi Love on the Naked Bus. Auckland, New Zealand to Christchurch, New Zealand. I'll tell you this, man. I'll tell you this. I don't know what's going to happen, man, but I want to have my kicks before the whole shithouse goes up in flames. Jim Morrison during a live performance in Boston, 1970. November 7th.
We had no trouble making it back into downtown Auckland and buying stove fuel in the morning after the airline mishap. However, finding a ride south turned out to be much more of a complicated issue. We could find no city transit bus route that would take us to the edge of town. Furthermore, we didn't even really know where the best spot would be on the edge of town. We talked to a few locals and received the same advice from literally all of them. Why don't you just use Naked Bus? My first thought was that we were being coerced into a Kiwi-style orgy of sorts. While it had, as the saying goes, been a while, I still wasn't keen on rolling around with a bunch of naked people in a pile somewhere. But it turns out that Naked Bus isn't an orgy. It also turns out that Kiwis look at you pretty strangely if you ask them if they're inviting you for a big orgy on a bus. No, in actuality, Naked Bus is a transit system used by the general public to hop from city to city around New Zealand on the cheap. On the very cheap. As in about $8 to $15 for some rides through the South Island. The North Island was a tad more expensive, and it would cost about $60 to get the both of us to Wellington where the ferry ports were located. We both agreed that this would end up being cheaper than hitchhiking there. It would have taken several days to make our way to the port, costing us more money in food and tobacco. Both of those were expensive. Tobacco cost even more here than it had in Oz, and we were still being complete idiots and continuing to smoke. So we booked the tickets. The only problem was that our bus didn't leave until the next morning, so we were faced with the task of finding a place to sleep for free in a large city. This was no easy endeavor. We had walked around a pier earlier in that day and decided that we could duck behind one of the buildings there for the night. It was still afternoon at this point, so I was in no hurry to leave the comfort and internet connection that the transit station was offering. But Aaron insisted that we head towards the pier. Why? It won't even be dark for a few more hours. We're just going to be twiddling our thumbs down there with nothing to do. Well, it's not like there's much to do here either. I think we should just get a move on and head that way. It's like a 10-minute walk. I don't think it's a good idea to go there without the cover of darkness anyway. I mean, everyone's going to see us setting up to sleep there. We bickered for a minute, and I finally told him he could go down there if he wanted, but I wasn't leaving until I was ready to go to sleep. Unwilling to walk there by himself, he relented and sat alongside me until evening. I thought back and remembered how he had done the same thing at the train station in Perth when we had camped outside. Why the hell was he insistent on preferring to sit and stare at the ground in discomfort? I digress. After darkness descended upon Auckland, we walked down to the pier and laid our sleeping bags between the wall of a building and some benches, out of sight of anyone in neighboring buildings or sidewalks. We cooked up some rice and were well into scarfing it down when we were approached by a large Kiwi security guard who was apparently making his rounds on the pier. Hey, what are you boys doing back here? Well, to be honest, we were hoping to sleep here. We don't have any money for a place to stay, Aaron told him. Hey, listen, I feel for you boys, but you can't stay here, sorry. You'd really get me in some shit if they ever found out, yeah? But what I can do is tell you a good place to sit up where the cops won't bother you. He proceeded to tell us about a park a few blocks away where we could hopefully slip into the bushes unnoticed. Just try and sneak in there, and if the cops find you, they'll probably find you, take you in, but as long as you're quiet and keep in the shadows, I think you'll be all right. Thanks, man. We appreciate the advice. Is it all right if we finish eating before we head up there? Yeah, no worries. Just don't be here on my next round, all right? And good luck to you both. The Kiwis were certainly not swaying in their friendliness. I had yet to encounter a local who wasn't cheerful or helpful to us in some manner. I mean, where else are you going to find a security guard who would kick you out and then turn around and tell you a place where you could go and illegally camp? We finished our dinner and then walked up to the park he'd told us about. It was dimly lit and filled with trees and bushes. We found a particularly dark area and slipped into it to set up camp for the night. We used leaves and branches to cover our bags so as not to give away our position, and then we both got into our sleeping bags and fell asleep quickly. I slept like a baby. That morning after waking, we made our way to the bus station and hopped on board our bus to Wellington. The bus ride was scheduled to take 12 hours, but I didn't really mind it too much.
I passed the time listening to music or watching downloaded movies on my phone. We stopped for lunch at a roadside cafe late in the afternoon. A sandwich cost $7 there, and I suggested that we split one.
Man, $7, Aaron commented. We should probably just wait till we get to Wellington to eat.
I understood where he was coming from, as our finances were catastrophically low, but I knew it was another 4 or 5 hours before we made it to our destination, and I was starving. We didn't have time to cook anything on the stove. Aaron, you are fucking high if you think I'm waiting another 5 hours to eat. Listen, you can do what you want, but I'm buying a sandwich. If you don't want half, that's on you. He ate half. We arrived in Wellington as expected hours later. It was becoming commonplace. We had to search hard to find a place to sleep in yet another large city. There were stark differences to this situation compared to the similar ones we'd faced in Europe. The cities here were quite modern and dense. In other words, it was rare that we'd find a place that wasn't heavily lit and populated. After arriving in the bus station, I wandered around for an hour or so while Aaron watched the gear. I couldn't find a single place where I thought we'd be able to sleep undetected. I came back defeated. Aaron offered to go look himself and came back about 20 minutes later.
Dude, I think I found us the perfect spot.
Thank God. I threw my pack onto my shoulders and picked up my guitar. I followed him across the main intersection near the bus station and behind a few buildings. We walked down an alley and emerged in a parking garage.
Right back in there.
He motioned to a dark corner of the parking garage.
I couldn't believe it.
Are you serious? We're going to get run over by a fucking car.
No, we'll be fine back there tonight. Nobody's going to come in here until morning.
I was overly skeptical and unexcited about spending the night on the floor of a dirty parking garage, but Aaron was right. This was probably the best place we'd find in the area. I was even less enthused when I noticed the smell of urine and saw shards of broken beer bottles littering the asphalt we were to be sleeping on. I swept the area with my foot and tried my best to spot the piss puddle that was causing the unpleasant odor. Obviously, I did not sleep well that night. The next morning, we woke up and started making a cup of instant coffee when a security guard pulled up.
Hey, you guys need to move it along now. Can't sleep here.
All right, Aaron replied. Is it cool if we finish making this cup of coffee before we leave?
Yeah, I suppose that'll be fine.
All right. Thanks, man. The guard drove away.
I mean, obviously we've already slept. That was kind of pointless, wasn't it? I asked with a chuckle.
Yeah, well, just be glad he showed up now and not in the middle of the night, I guess.
We finished our coffee and walked to the ferry station. Here we would board a large boat that would take us to Picton, a port on the South Island. From there, it would be another ride the next day to Christchurch, and then yet another to Lake Tekapo. I sat outside of the ferry station to play some guitar while we were waiting. Before long, I was approached by a security guard. The number of security guards everywhere seemed to be overwhelming, by the way. I thought he was going to tell me to stop playing, but he walked up with a big smile.
Hey, man. Nice guitar. Is it smaller for traveling or something?
Yeah. It's called a Little Martin Traveler guitar. You mind if I play?
Sure, man. Go for it.
I handed him the guitar. He started strumming some reggae rhythm and sang in an upbeat, soft tone.
Damn, dude, you're pretty good, I commented. Ah, no, brother, man. I suck. He laughed. He was being modest. The guy had the voice of a reggae angel.
So what kind of music do you like?
A bunch of stuff, really, but mainly, I guess, some newer folk rock or folk acoustic stuff. Ton of classic rock and oldies, some 90s music.
I named off a couple bands, and he told me he hadn't heard of them.
Well, what kind of music do you listen to?
Hey, a lot of roots reggae and such.
How about Sublime?
Yeah, man, I love Sublime.
Dude, you gotta check out these local blokes.
Before I knew it, we were each scribbling down lists for one another to look up later and exchanging tunes on the guitar. He finally stood up.
Well, I better get back to my post, man. You take care, eh?
I said my goodbye and walked back to the ferry station to prepare for boarding. The ferry we booked was laughably awesome considering what our living situation had been over the past few days. We had luxuriously comfortable seats with power outlets, and the ship even had Wi-Fi.
After arriving in Picton, we made our way to the bus station we'd be meeting at to head east to Christchurch the next day. We had to find somewhere to sleep that night yet again. An argument erupted, as once again Aaron wanted to go find a spot early and sit there for hours and hours until it got dark. "Why don't we just go to the bus station and hang out on the Wi-Fi for a while?" I argued. "I mean, I don't have anything to do on Wi-Fi." "There are countless ways to kill time if you have an internet connection, man. I mean, what are you going to do when you get to this place?"
"Well, I think we should just get a move on, get things set up. We need to get some groceries, too."
"We have like 6 hours before it gets dark, man. We have plenty of time to sit around on Wi-Fi, go get groceries, and then go find a sleeping spot after dark. People are going to see us quite literally plain as day walking into a sleeping spot. Plus, it'd be nice to charge the phones and stuff before we get on the bus tomorrow."
"God, we always have to do whatever you want. I don't get why it's so important to play on your phone all the time."
"Aaron, I don't understand why you're insistent on going somewhere and staring at the fucking grass for hours. How about this? I'll let you sit with the stuff while the phones charge, and I'll go to the supermarket myself and get the groceries and shit. Or vice versa.
I think it's stupid to split up. We should just both go there and then head to the park and find a sleeping spot."
I finally had enough. "Aaron, you can do whatever the fuck you want. If you want to go to the grocery store, go. If not, don't. I'm going to the bus station to charge my phone. I'll be at that fucking park over there when it gets dark. If you're there, cool. If not, whatever." He exploded back.
"You're such a fucking asshole. I guess I'll go get the groceries then and you can sit with the stuff if that's what you want to do so bad."
"Whatever." Our mood didn't improve the rest of the evening, and after we went to the park much earlier than I'd wanted, mainly because I was tired of hearing him continue to complain, I left him to sit there and stare at the ground like he'd wanted while I went to the bay to play guitar and watch the sunset. A Chinese girl came up and sat next to me on the bench after I'd been there for an hour or so. She started trying to communicate with me, but didn't speak any English, so nothing really came of it. I sat and played songs, and she listened. Soon, some younger teenage Kiwi kids came and sat near me as well. The Chinese girl left, and they started asking me all kinds of questions. "Where are you from? Are you with the guy in the bushes over there?" "United States." "Yes, I'll assume that's my friend Aaron you saw in the bushes." After answering enough pointless questions, I finally walked back over to Aaron. He had found a spot back behind some trees where he was sitting and heating up rice. I didn't mention to him the fact that, exactly like I said would happen, people had spotted us before darkness had been able to conceal our campsite. We decided we should move spots. Once darkness had completely fallen and we'd eaten our dinner, we moved to an escarpment of young trees a short distance away. We were just setting out our sleeping bags when we saw some kids walking through the middle of the park.
"Homeless guys? Hey, homeless guys, where are you?"
Aaron and I both remained silent. We were unsure of their intentions.
"We should just throw some rocks into the bushes until we hear one of them," one of the kids said.
Aaron reached for his sheath knife and I grabbed a stick nearby, both of us worried that the group of teenagers were up to something insidious. Eventually, they circled around to a concrete platform that was situated behind and above us and started looking directly down into our makeshift campsite.
"Hey, there they are."
"What do you want?" Aaron asked.
"Hey, can one of you guys buy us a box?"
one of the kids spoke up.
"A box? A what?" I asked. "A bottle of vodka," another kid answered.
How old are you guys?"
16.
I don't know. We're just trying to party with these girls and we told them we can get some vodka."
I thought back to my high school years. I nodded my head and shrugged my shoulders at Aaron in approval.
"Give us $5 and we will," Aaron told him.
"Tell you what, mate, we'll give you 10.
"All right, meet me back down here and show me where the liquor store is."
I woke up periodically throughout the night, itching like crazy from ants that were crawling into my sleeping bag. Once again, just after we'd woken up and started making our coffee, a security guard approached us.
"Hey, sorry, but you guys can't sleep here."
"And again, can we finish making our coffee?"
"Yeah, sure thing, mate."
We both laughed after the exchange.
"Well, hopefully they keep kicking us out after we spend the night," Aaron commented.
On the bus ride to Christchurch, we passed through beautiful countryside. There were rolling hills of wildflowers and snow-capped mountains. Breathtaking winding roads led us through the most wonderful views I'd seen so far on our journey, even more so than the landscapes I'd seen in Switzerland. I wrote the following passage in my journal. That feeling of absolute awe when you see something so beautiful as these New Zealand mountains and countryside, easily comparable to the first time I set eyes on the Grand Canyon in Arizona, the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, or the Badlands in South Dakota. That feeling of breathlessness and inspiration, your pupils growing wide in an attempt to capture all of its beauty. Your mind goes numb. All other thoughts drift into your subconscious, and you find yourself thinking of big-picture things, such as the origins and purpose of life. You take a picture, but you know it's useless. This is too big, no, too emotional to capture. It can't be caught at all, and its captivating spell can only be experienced by those who drive, fly, or walk to get there themselves. It's these views that have caused men to die, to uproot their families and walk hundreds or thousands of miles in hope of a better life. The spell is apparent even in this journal entry as I open this book to write only a few short sentences, yet here I am still babbling. Misty, hazy, wonderful blues and puffy white clouds meet snow and rock-covered peaks, which then fall to a never-ending landscape of the most perfect green rolling hills. And you think to yourself, not everyone will make the journey to see this. And for that, I'm deeply saddened. End of chapter 31. Chapter 32. Escape from Mount Tekapo. Tekapo, New Zealand. Adventure, yeah. I guess that's what they call it when everybody comes back alive. Mercedes Lackey. November 10th. Upon arrival in Christchurch, we were once again left with no plans or ideas about what to do. There was a stack of pamphlets at the bus stop where we were able to grab a map of the city. We spotted a park relatively close by, which we figured would be our, quote, hotel for the night. There were also icons which showed where we could find free Wi-Fi, and we set our sights on one right next to the park called Pallet Pavilion. A terrible earthquake had hit Christchurch in 2011 that left much of the city covered in rubble. What happened afterwards could inspire even the most pessimistic of souls. The entire community came together to rebuild, but not in the same manner as before the quake had hit. Anything that could be recycled was. Any bare lot was used for community projects. There was a mini golf course throughout the entire city that was constructed entirely from materials recycled from earthquake rubble. An entire mall made out of old shipping containers. Pallet Pavilion was one of these projects. It was a large forum built entirely of recycled wood pallets and anything else they could find in the wreckage of the city. Tables made out of recycled signs, old crates as chairs. There were flowers planted throughout the entire pavilion, and a stage was set up in the corner for bands. Coffee and snacks were sold from a little shack off onto one side, and free unlimited Wi-Fi was offered to anyone who took a seat inside. It was all open air, meaning there wasn't a roof. Each pallet that made up the walls had a name written on it, of a volunteer who had helped during its construction. The community projects organization was called Gap Filler. We were so eternally grateful for free internet, considering how surprisingly hard it was to come by in Europe. I posted something on the Artists Abroad Facebook page about how we had made it to Christchurch and would be trying to find a place to sleep in a nearby park. As I was going through emails, I saw a comment on the aforementioned post from Abby, my New Zealand graphic design client friend, who'd told us which spots to check out during our stay. "Hey, I live in Christchurch. You guys can come stay at my place if you want." I quickly shot her a message. "That would be incredible. Are you sure it's okay?" After she cleared it with her roommates, she offered to meet us at a bus station near her house. In a couple short hours, we went from planning to sleep in the bushes in a city park to sitting on a back porch drinking beers while our gracious hosts grilled steaks, chicken, shrimp, and did our laundry. Abby was a slender Irish woman who'd moved to New Zealand a year prior. She was a travel blogger, which is how I connected with her for design work in the first place. Her roommates were Janita, a Kiwi, and Jimbo, who was a Brit.
What are your plans for the next week or so? Janita asked as we sipped beer and waited on the food to cook.
Well, we're headed to Lake Tekapo for the next week. Then we'll be back here to catch a flight back to Auckland.
Even though we'd missed our first flight, our return flight was still valid.
What in the fuck are you going to do in Tekapo for 6 days? Jimbo asked.
We didn't know more than what we'd seen in pictures, but it looked as if Tekapo is a small town situated alongside of a huge blue lake and surrounded by mountains. But we're planning on finding a place around there to camp. We don't really have any money to do much else.
You're going to be bored off your fucking asses, mate.
There wasn't much we could do about it, so we didn't really address the issue. Boredom was something we were all too familiar with. After dinner, we all sat around drinking and chatting. They asked me to get out the guitar, and I happily obliged, drinking and playing into the night. We had to be up early in the morning to catch another bus to the University Plaza, where we would catch our second bus on to Tekapo, but that didn't put much of a hindrance on partying for the night. Jimbo continued to tease us about Tekapo.
We'll be here all cozy this week, and these two stupid fuckers are going to be sitting in the mountains jacking off for 5 fucking days.
I blurted out, actually, so far on this trip, I've masturbated on a train, a plane, a hammock, and now after the ferry to Picton, even on a fucking boat. Aaron practically spit out his beer.
Huh?
Everyone else laughed.
Are you fucking kidding me, mate, Jimbo?
I'm 100% serious. I think all I need is a bus now and I'll have my masturbation bucket list completed.
You really did that in all those places? Aaron asked, astonished and disgusted.
Yes, absolutely. The masturbation bucket list idea arose from, as you could probably guess, a drunken joke between Corey and me before leaving.
My question is, Jimbo jumped in again, is cranking it on a fucking bicycle on that list of yours? 'Cause that one could get a little tricky.
Okay, so 2 more items on the bucket list. At some point it ended up being just Janita and me awake. We were both, for a lack of better wording, hammered drunk at this point. It didn't take much for me, considering how much my tolerance had dropped over the past 5 months. I finally got up to make my way to bed, but she stopped me along the way.
You know, you can just sleep in my bed with me if you want.
That's all be all right. I'll be fine with Aaron. I got the feeling there was something more than just sleeping involved if I accepted her offer.
Oh, come on. You know you won't sleep very well in there.
As much as I would have liked to have a little bit of drunken sex at the time, I just wasn't attracted to her. I'm definitely at a point in my life where I'm not going to sleep with someone unless I genuinely like them in that way. With her, those feelings just weren't there. So after several minutes of flirty banter, I drunkenly stumbled to the guest bedroom and fell onto the bed. I woke up the next morning with a raging hangover. Janita prepared us containers of food to take with us to Tekapo. I offered to put them in my pack since I had more room than Aaron and they wouldn't fit in our grocery bags. A couple hours later and we were on a bus headed to Tekapo. It wasn't a very long bus ride to my recollection, but the scenery was once again breathtaking. When we arrived at our destination, my eyes were even more attentive. The lake was absolutely stunning. Imagine turquoise water, like the color of a robin's egg. I mean, so blue, like it was filled with blue frost Gatorade. Glacial mountains pounded minerals into dust and filtered it into the water which fed the lake. What we were seeing was essentially a lake of rocks, or of blue sand, more appropriately. We were absolutely mesmerized by the thing. We couldn't stop staring at it. After we'd taken approximately 5,000 pictures, we threw our packs on and started hiking around the lake. We saw a large group of trees on the mountainside at one end of the lake. We figured we'd head up there, set up camp, and come down to the lake periodically for water. We could tell right off the bat that there wasn't going to be anything to do in the, quote, town. There was nothing there, aside from a couple small restaurants, a grocery store, and hotels or guest houses. As we rounded the lake and started heading up the mountain, Aaron began to lag behind. The extra weight of his pack was taking its toll. I, on the other hand, had no problems after dropping all my extra weight and practically skipped up the trail. "Come on, dude!" I hopped forward with a smile as he labored onward, leaning forward to relieve his shoulders periodically. I didn't once offer to carry the grocery bags.
He made his decision to carry all that unnecessary weight, and I wasn't going to baby him at that point. My skipping stopped as we climbed higher up the mountain, and the grade as well as the altitude increased greatly. The lake sits at around 4,000 feet elevation, and at this time of the year the air was quite thin. We were gasping for breath by the time we finally discovered a spot a couple hundred yards off the trail where we could lay our sleeping bags. It was underneath a huge pine tree. There was an open spot in the thick lower branches, which provided somewhat of a natural cove. We draped our rainfly cover over one of the branches to create a canopy over top of us. The first thing I noted about our mountainside campsite was the incline. We were on what was probably a 35 to 40 degree grade, pretty steep. I knew I would quite literally slide down the mountain in my sleeping bag if I didn't rig something up, so I came up with an idea to anchor myself. I took a rock about the size of a tennis ball and placed it in the top of my sleeping bag's hood. I pulled the bag tight around the rock and then tied a rope around the bag below the rock. The rope then led up the tree where it was tied to one of the roots, tying my bag firmly to the tree. Aaron didn't think the incline would pose too much of a problem, so he didn't do anything. Turns out we were both wrong. Aaron woke up halfway down the mountain in the middle of the night and had to climb back up several times. I ended up forced into a ball in the bottom of my sleeping bag every hour or so. We would have to try something different the next night. The following day, we did nothing. And I mean absolutely nothing. I played guitar for a while, wrote in my journal, sat and looked at the lake, and ended up laying under the canopy, bouncing tiny pine cones off the back of my guitar and trying to land them into a cup. We made a slingshot out of my guitar strap and used it to try to launch rocks all the way down to the lake hundreds of feet below. We watched episodes of a TV show on my phone before it finally died. We drank a lot of coffee and smoked a lot of cigarettes. I was laughing already at what Jimbo had said. I mean, what the fuck were we going to do there for a week? We spent hours and hours tediously trying to pass time faster. We stared at the lake a lot. That thing was just fucking awesome still. That night, Aaron came up with a brilliant plan. We could tie one end of our hammocks to the trunk of the tree and the other end to one of the outlying branches. This would make the top part of the hammock pretty much on the ground, while the other end would be lifted away from the grade, essentially making a level platform. We already knew that hammocks were bad for cold weather because of the lack of insulation underneath, but we figured since most of our bodies would be on the ground, it wouldn't be too bad. I rigged mine up, but Aaron couldn't get his to work correctly due to a lack of sufficient branches on his side. Instead, he took a thick piece of bark and used it as a shovel, digging a somewhat less inclined ditch into the mountain. We settled into our sleeping positions for the night, and I felt surprisingly comfortable. I fell asleep quickly. About 3 hours later, I woke up in a fit of trembling. My entire body convulsed with cold shivers. It felt like even my insides were trembling. I couldn't catch my breath. I could feel the cold air sliding up below me as it blew up the side of the mountain. I labored to unzip my hammock so I could get onto solid ground. My hand was shaking so badly I could hardly grip the zipper. I had and still have not ever been that cold before. I couldn't think clearly at all, and my motor functions weren't working. I started to wonder if I was experiencing the beginning stages of hypothermia. Finally, I was able to grasp the hammock zipper and pull it open. I rolled out of the hammock and onto the ground, where I immediately assumed the fetal position and sunk deep into my sleeping bag. I was still shaking uncontrollably and felt dizzy even though I was lying down. What the hell is wrong with me right now? I wondered as I blew into my cupped hands and attempted to regain my core temperature. After 20 minutes or so, my situation hadn't improved. I couldn't concentrate on anything, and I felt my thoughts skipping around sporadically. I had an idea during one of these fleeting moments and finally sprung to action to try to get myself back to normal. I reached for the backpacking stove and coffee cup. The pots clanged as my hands shakily rummaged through the cooking gear. Aaron stirred a little but didn't wake. I didn't want to wake him up until I thought I needed to be hospitalized or something. If this idea didn't work, that seemed like it would be happening soon. something was drastically wrong with my body. I filled the cup with water and set it over the backpacking stove after it was lit. As soon as I saw steam coming from the cup, I grabbed it from the stove and quickly drank it. I could actually feel the warm water enter my stomach and begin to heat up my body. I filled it again and put it back on the stove. I sipped the next one and wrapped my hands around the warm cup.